Welcome to the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with myself, Paul O'Kane, and Joe Barr. Joe is an endurance cyclist, and today Joe's going to tell us a wee bit about cycling and endurance cycling, and a wee bit about the highs and lows of being an elite athlete. Joe, you're very welcome, and thanks very much for agreeing to do our podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Not at all. So, Joe, we'll get straight in. Tell us a wee bit about yourself, a wee bit about your background, your influences, and how you get into cycling.
Oh, well, that's a long story, so I'm going to have to compress that down for you. So, I was born in Dublin. I grew up as a young person in Donegal, actually. But because we live so close to the border, my life really has been spent in Northern Ireland. So that's sort of the background of how I come to be here, first of all. I started cycling at a very young age, probably around about the age of 13. I rode my first race in 1972.
Wow.
And I've raced 52 seasons consecutively to date. So, it's been a lifetime of sport and, you know, and all the ups and downs with that. It was a great proud moment for me back in 1986 whenever we won Commonwealth for Northern Ireland and one of the only road medals that ever came to Northern Ireland. So that was a very proud moment in my history in mainstream racing, because I first of all started off in what we would refer to as mainstream racing as an amateur, and then went on to become a professional after the second Commonwealth Games I did in Auckland, New Zealand, 1990. I was professional for 7 years and retired. Just 1999, I retired from mainstream racing. I continued to ride the bike in different forms of semi-competition. We would refer to them as Grand Fondo in Europe, and probably in the UK would be better known as Big Sportifs. And in 2009, I started in World Endurance Racing, and I've sort of been there since. So that's the overview, roughly, of what it all looked like.
Right. I suppose now you started at 13. Did you try any other sports? Did you try football or anything like that? Or was it just cycling?
I did. I was at college actually in Donegal, and I was involved a lot in distance running actually, cross country. I tried football for a while, and I was relatively good at both. But, when I started to ride the bike, I realized that, you know, that there was something different about how I performed in it. And I'm not saying it was easy, and I'm not saying I ever got to the absolute pinnacle of the sport, but I think I made a better position in it than I would have if I had stuck to either, you know, football or running or whatever. Like, so the other thing was, like, I really loved the sport. I loved the engineering that was attached to it as well. Like, so, cycling's a very broad spectrum of stuff. It's not just the athletic performance around it. It's, you know, the engineering and technology that goes into the bikes and equipment, like, is also a very interesting aspect of the whole thing. So being involved in the industry behind the scenes is also very exciting stuff.
So you did the cycling, and when you were in the Commonwealth Games, what sort of distance was that race?
In the Commonwealth Games, the race that we participated in was 100 kilometres or 62 miles back then. They moved it to the indoor velodrome, where you have people be more familiar with it, where they would see four together on laps. Back then, they did it out in the road. It was incredibly difficult discipline of the sport. Northern Ireland sent a team that was both that and then also in what we would refer to as the individual road race, where, you know, it's a road race of 120 or 130 riders all riding against each other for the win. So I didn't participate in the road race, but I did in the team time trial and both Commonwealth Games actually. It was an exciting time, but, you know, mainstream road racing, like, unless you go to professional, maxes out at about distance max at the very high end of sports, maybe around 160 miles. In the sports, usually a lot less, like maybe 80 or 90 miles is where it would max out with the amateurs. But endurance racing is very extremely different.
I mean, so that's a big difference between that and the endurance, but we'll get that in a second. So you retired in 99, is that right?
Yes, yes, correct.
What brought you back in?
I tried, obviously, I never made it to the top of the sports, so I had to go and do a normal job for a while. So I did that for a period of time while I was still, doing what we would call, as I say, the semi-competitive events. And I was traveling to Europe to do maybe once a month or something like that. I was going to do a big one in Italy or France or Portugal or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And did mainstream work as well at that point. But in 2009, what brought me to really to come back to race was a little bit of a twist in normal life. In 2007, I have two sons, Ruben and Ross, and yes. Ross younger. And Ross, when Ross was born, he was diagnosed with brain tumor. So he was only 5 months old and it was stage. So I went through the cancer journey, both from a family perspective and from a personal perspective, because they're two very different things. And I went through that process for about 2 years. And then one of the, we come through that system, you come to realize that there's an awful lot of assistance and help needed along the way, with all the people who are trying to do the best they are for all the families that have sick children. Mm-hmm. So I got heavily involved in some children's cancer fundraising. And one of the events I chose to go to do was something I had never done before, which was an endurance race. And ironically, I sat and asked myself, what is it that I can do that could generate some funds? Because I had some very specific target things that I wanted to actually try to purchase to try and help, this long queue of families that were coming behind me, because I had experienced the harshness, mm-hmm. of what that world actually is. And so the race around Ireland in 2009 was the first time there was ever a World Endurance Cycling event ever allocated to Ireland. And I didn't have any idea whatsoever what it was. Any idea. But what I did know was I had a rough understanding, because there is 2,500 kilometers long right around the exterior perimeter of Ireland, it was going to be 6 or 7 days of promotional opportunity. And mm-hmm. and I called on all the media people and all the friends I had around me to try and come and help. And we sort of watched together a team as to what I thought it should look like. And I set off for a race around Ireland against some of the top riders in the world. Actually, the world champion was there. He was actually the rider who was off in front of me. It was an Italian mm-hmm. lad called Fabio Biasalo. And I, again, didn't know any of these people because they were icons on their own sport. And I was the complete rookie or novice to the whole thing. But the long story short is, in 2009, I ended up winning the race around Ireland. And first was I got qualified for Race Across America, and simply mm-hmm. That set the tone for how my endurance career set off. I know a lot of people who follow me always thought that I had some elusive plan mm-hmm. to get into it, but I really didn't. I fell into it, and but when I did, when I realized that I could do it, even the very raw way that I was doing it the first time I did it, because when I won Race on Ireland, I think if I was to go back there and try and do that again, I probably couldn't, because it was very emotionally charged as well for me. Mm-hmm. The piece that I took away from the children's charity was that, I got so accustomed to everything I was seeing in the haematology ward, and I was in the Royal Victoria in Belfast, the children's hospital in Belfast. Mm-hmm. I got so accustomed to seeing the highs and lows of that I always carried one thing away from it, and it's still really one of the pillars that I use today, and that is, no matter what happens, the kids who are sick have to get up the next day and keep going. Yeah. They don't have a choice to go home, or they don't have a choice to do whatever they want to do. They just have to do what they have to do. Mm-hmm. And endurance racing is very like that. You just got to find a way to keep finding the next mile. And mm-hmm. And that's, I took that and I used that one pillar, and it served me well so far.
It has indeed, without a doubt. What's the cycling or the endurance cycling community like? Do you get on with each other? Do you help each other?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was one of the things that really attracted me to the sport, was because coming from mainstream where it was very ego-driven, you know, individually driven, you know, it was just about winning all the time. You know, something happened to a competitor, you know, you really didn't take that on board. You know, it was okay, tough, but you know, we move on. Endurance racing is not really like that. Endurance racing is, because everybody knows how difficult it is to finish one of these events, everyone knows at any given moment in time everyone's in trouble. So, but if you've got some form of a mechanical trouble, or you have a sickness or a crash or something like that, you'll find that all the other teams stop along the road and are willing to help and will always offer help and whatever. So I find it a very softer environment to be in, a much more enjoyable environment to be in, and it's an easier world to be in, with the highs and lows that go with, you know, when you've just finished a big race or you've been successful. One of the things that happens is, regardless of how good you are, you're completely exhausted. Mm-hmm. That's that reality that comes with it. So you need a big recovery time after that. So managing your own mind when you come home or come away from a big event where it's either been successful, it hasn't been successful, or whatever way that has turned out, you have to then come to a place where you remove yourself from that world, that understand and know everything that's going on about it, and position yourself in a world where people are just getting on with normal life and don't even recognize or understand or know. So there comes a huge high and a huge low, and it takes a lot of experience to be able to manage that, to keep yourself personally in a good place.
Yeah, well, am I allowed to ask what age you are?
Currently, at the moment, I'm 64 years old.
That's absolutely marvellous. And tell us, you mean, you touched on the race across America. What sort of distance is that? How long does it take? And, I mean, there's three questions I'm on here. How long does it take to recover? You touched on recovery.
I'll give you the race stuff first, and I'll give you the recovery then. Yeah. Like, and race across America is probably the most toughest endurance race there is in the world. Matter of fact, it arguably is the most tough. Starts in Oceanside, California, and it finishes 3,100 miles later in Annapolis in Maryland on the Atlantic Ocean. So it's ocean to ocean. To give people an understanding of the size and magnitude of that, most people in today's world have either seen or heard of the Tour de France as a bike race, so they'll understand what that is. So, you know, it lasts 23 days, whatever, and it's, 2,500 kilometers long. Race Across America is 3,100 miles long, which is almost 500K, and it's done in 12 days.
My good. Flip. So there's a cutoff about 12 days, Joe. That's unbelievable.
The race is, I think it's about 45 years old, the race itself, but there's only been, there's less than 400 people solo in that period of time has ever managed to get across. I happen to be one of them. And I think my number is 52 or something to finish, to get across. And I've been across, I've tried it three times and I've been across. So it's an incredible journey. You know, you have a full team looking for people looking after you in a solo attempt, and things that happen on that race, like almost change how you view life, and they change you as a person. Mm-hmm. You know, it has everything in it. It has the searing heat of Arizona deserts. You go up to the top of the Rocky Mountains. You have the Great Plains in Kansas. Mm-hmm. And so it has everything that you could ever imagine in a race. And I think that sort of encaptures really what endurance racing is all about. You know, it's one of the great privileges I do, is that I get to see the world from a very different perspective, and I get to see it in different countries with different cultures. And you know, this year we did the race around Poland, which was nearly 1,000 kilometers long, touched on six countries. It's just an incredible race, and I'd never before. So it's you know, stuff like that, you gather a great appreciation for the privileged place that you have. Like, so, you know, people always say to me, you know, about, you know, what would your dream job be? And I actually think I'm living it every day, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
See, if you've already you've chipped into my one of my questions, Joe, which, you know, you're doing it. So, Armani's in the team. What does your team consist of?
Well, it depends on the size of the race, because endurance racing can go from, you know, a 24-hour race, which is for us is roughly around 500 miles. Start at 500, it can go up to 3,000 plus. And it depends on that the size and how many team that you would have with you or how many is required, because obviously there's financial implications to that when you're moving equipment and people around the world. So, you know, we could have as little as 3 to 4 people, but we could have as many as 10. And they will consist of drivers, navigators, physio, nutrition. We even have weather, and we run like algorithm matrix for, you know, wind velocity and, you know, how we actually ride the event, the strategy of the event, decided by one person, like, who actually watches all that stuff and compiles it all into an algorithm, like, which tells us, you know, we should stop now because there's a storm coming, sleep now, the storm will pass, the rain will pass, go again. So you're always in the time that you're moving forward. So we have people who do that. So there's an awful lot of stuff behind the scenes, like that go on to make one of these world events like very successful. Like, and I'm very fortunate in that I made my way into the top echelons of that. I wouldn't say by any stretch that I'm the best, but I'm thereabouts. Like, and we try to take all the team that we try to use. We try to use them from Ireland and from home. We have some from around the world, but mostly all the people who are involved are Irish.
Well, I mean, and why I did ask and go back, why I asked your age, because obviously I did a bit of research on you and checked you out, and I saw a photograph of you. I mean, you're in absolutely magnificent shape. So you would, I guess you'd have to be. How many hours are you on the saddle, Joe, on average, without giving your competitors an edge? You're doing these endurance, is it, I don't know, 12 hours or something there?
Well, no, if we were doing something, well, I've just finished a race there, a few races this year, like, you know, like a 24-hour race is start to finish, no stops.
Okay.
500 mile. And the benchmark for the big races, like Race Across America or Poland or any of the really big ones, you know, 1,000 plus, you're normally, we aim for 40 hours with no stops. And then, you know, if you want to be competitive, sharp end, like, that's where you got to be. Some of the good guys can go 50. You know, but I've come in 35 to 40, I can do, and then recover and go again. And normally, to put that in context, in every 24 hours in like Race Across America, the first 2 days, first, you know, 40 hours, you have no stops. Then you'll take an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. If it's a 2 hour stop, it'll be an hour and a half for sleep, and the rest will be for change of clothes and quick piece of go again.
Right, okay. I'm nearly sorry I asked.
It's pretty aggressive, like, you know, but it's not until you really start looking at the capability of these athletes, like what they can do. It's just mind-boggling, and you learn so much yourself. Like, you know, I learned so much about sleep deprivation. I learned so much how to manage my mind in the nighttime whenever, you know, you want to hallucinate, you want to do all these other different things, and your body's telling you to stop, and how you can overcome that. And it's certainly one of the things that I've discovered is the power of how your own mind functions. I mean, body will follow. But utilizing that and being able to manage it to get the best out of yourself, it's probably why I'm still racing this, because I used to always think that there was a pinnacle to what you could do or achieve, but I've now come to realize that that's not real. The further that you can go, there's even further. It's just how you actually understand how to get there. And it's one of the sad things about the human race is that they don't utilize anywhere near the capability of what their body's capable of doing. And that's one of the things endurance racing has taught me. You know, 1 minute, like whenever I was mainstream, if somebody had asked me to be able to ride for 24 hours non-stop, I would have laughed and just ran away and went, not possible. But now I look at some of the distances I've raced, and, you know, I actually did a very interesting race a few years ago. It was actually in lockdown time whenever we got a little bit of respite and we were able to go. I raced the full Wild Atlantic Way in the west of Ireland non-stop for 127 hours. Experienced my own country in a way that I'd never seen it before.
Yeah.
Realized it existed. So it was beautiful. And so experiences like that, you know, you put that in context of being in lockdown and everything that happened to everyone who couldn't move around, who were trapped in their own homes and did all of that. And all of a sudden, here was me, and I had the opportunity to write probably one of the most iconic routes there is in the whole world, on my own back door.
Yep.
And you know, so things like that really open you up to understand what's possible with your mind. And, you know, I don't think it matters really what walk of life you're in. You know, utilization of how your mental stability is key.
So, and then, so in your downtime, Joe, physically, you're obviously in top condition. So whenever you're not in training, how do you, what do you do for downtime?
Downtime is usually recovery.
Yes.
Like, you know, because obviously, my wife Sean and I obviously have a saying that, you know, that we're either getting ready to go to a race or we're coming home from a race. And that's the way it looks. But we live a performance lifestyle at our home. Like, you know, so my wife's a nutritionist with me and looks after me. And we just live a life of performance. You know, it's all about sleep and recovery. And Jill's a fantastic gardener, so we live in a beautiful garden. And so there's an awful lot of the pluses to book, you know, what we do. But, you know, we're traveling the world, so when we come home, it's like a little story where we get to recover and not be under the pressure or the stress of racing or whatever, and do our best to try and unwind from all of that and then get ready to go again. Just sort of what we do, like, and with it here. 2023 was unusual in that, you know, the season went right on, almost right up until Christmas for us, just because of the way it worked out. So it meant an awfully long time. So this year is a little bit different in that January has been, you know, a very low month of recovery and whatever, where this time last year, like, we were ready for first race. Like, so it's, this year's a little bit different, like, you know, just the way it's timing out. Like, so we're not going to start racing until May. That's what we do, really. We have a quiet, low-key life, like, away from all the pressures of racing.
And how many races a year, normally, is there in the endurance?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, the actual world calendar is huge. I mean, you can race around all around the world, everywhere. Like, you know, there's probably a race every week somewhere. But what we do is we structure a very purposeful season, like, you know, like in 2023, our main goal, as it has been for the last several years, is the overall World Cup. So we were very strategic about the races that we were selecting for that. And one of the deciding factors in a season is, like, if you're going to do one of the really big events, like, or like we saw in Poland, or some of the big ones that are, like, you know, all beyond 3,000 or 4,000. When you do one event like that per year, you're usually looking at maybe 2 to 3 other smaller events stacked around that. So they could be like 24 hours or a 500 or something like that, maybe a 7, maybe an 800K one, and then one of the big ones. And then by the end of the year, it'd take a fair bit of recovery to recover from something like that. You know, we have it pretty sorted out now. Like, but I mean, if you got it wrong, you could spend 6 months recovering from one of those, maybe. But get it correct, like, you're in pretty good shape in 3 to 4 weeks again.
So, Joe, where can people find you if they're looking for you? I know where I found you on the board. What have you, any websites or anything of guys are looking? Where can our listeners get you?
Yeah, absolutely. We have our own website at teamjoebar.com. We're currently in the process of starting a new program called Bar Ultra, which is where we're bringing in riders from around the world, and we're putting them all under one umbrella, because you know, a lot of people, you know, think about endurance racing, so they think about it like as an individual thing, and there's an awful lot of riders around the world, you know, really good quality riders that are struggling for, let's call it a home or a place to be. So we're trying to put together a program like that would you know, house that, like, so that's a new program that we're working on at the moment. But through the website you find us, or through Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, because we're on all those platforms as Team Joe Bar. So
Brilliant. Yes. Excellent, Joe. Good man. And just my final comment is I saw you at one of these breakfast mornings with the Trust years and years ago, but it still resonates for me. I do a wee bit of running, and when I find it hard, I always have this wee mantra, Joe, you said it, which was exceptional preparation leads to exceptional results.
Yes, correct.
I still have that when the going gets tough. So, thanks very much.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me. And as someone needs to find us, they'll find us here at the website, and we'll be only too happy to answer any questions.
Good man, Joe. Cheers, and thanks again.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All the best, mate. Bye-bye.